Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Inclusion First Podcast. My name is Carrie Sawyer and I'm your host. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm so happy that you're here. We are going to have another amazing conversation today. The guest that I have the pleasure of introducing you to today is one of those people who has lived an incredible life, who has accomplished so many important things that they could have like a 19-page bio and you'd want to listen to every word because the stuff that they are doing is just that on the forefront. I am super lucky to have come into contact with Curling Robinson and his amazing wife, Johanna, who was already on the show in 2021. And honestly, I've adopted them as mentors to me because they are brilliant. They are so connected and so, so kind. They're like these people that are like master brainstormers and come up with like all these ideas in like a very short amount of time. And it's just a joy to talk to them because they are joyful people. So let me introduce you to my friend Curling because I could keep going on and on about how wonderful a person he is. Curling Robinson is a co-founder, a musician, and a startup visionary with over 25 years of expertise in software development and entrepreneurship. Curling's unique path was woven by the arts, automotive, technology, energy, and the drive to help his fellow man. Curling is the kind of person who did his first startup at the age of 19, right? So he is a visionary for sure. Now, leveraging the University of Southern California, where he studied computer science, Curling has facilitated many successful companies. He is most proud of his work with the Code for America project, bringing the Family Assessment Form to the cloud. Now, the Family Assessment Form allows governments to analyze big data on how individual states, provinces are dealing with teen pregnancy, suicide, and other societal issues, providing insights into applying successes into other states to help children, families, and make the world a better place, right? So using big data, using the cloud, connecting all the resources that we have to make the world better. I love it. That's our mission too. Now, currently, Curling is in collaboration with key partners like Apple, Blackstone, Google, and multiple universities as he is leading a team that runs the Focus platform. Now, Focus uses machine learning to quickly assess entrepreneurs and match them with screened certified business mentors. He is currently a board member for San Diego Workforce Partnership, Workforce Ventures, Startup San Diego, and Connect All at the Jacobs Center's Advisory Committee. Curling is amazing. We're going to have an incredible conversation. Join me in welcoming him to the Inclusion First Podcast. Let's get right into it. Curling, welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. I am so excited that you're here. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me today.
Yeah, thank you too. You know, you've been so helpful to our community. It's like, you asked me to come on, like, of course, you've been just a blessing for everybody. And I know you're going to continue helping some of our women founders and Black and Brown founders. So just thank you.
It's my pleasure. And, you know, secretly, you're on my mentor list. So just going to continue to trick you into mentoring me in all things. But Curling, so tell us a little bit about who you are, your work in this world and you know, why it's so important.
Usually I always start off with my name, Curling. When my grandparents, early 1900s, moved from the South, right? Alabama, Georgia area, to the North, in Cleveland, this place called Shaker Heights. The family that helped them out the most were the Curlings. It was a Jewish family. And so when my dad was born, they just honored that relationship by calling him Curling, just to honor that, right? And I'm Curling Jr. So, you know, I think a community, like being helpful in the community, I think about that story. I want to help people that they name their kid after you, right? You want to have that type of relationship in your community. And that's what I learned from my grandfather. I'm grandson and son of pastors, but they just raised a geek. Background's AI and machine learning. I went to a school called USC. And I had so many great mentors there. So they would always tell me like, hey, you know what? I gave you this great idea. Apply it to something. So I used to apply everything my teacher said to a business. And one of my first companies, I helped with ABC and CBS connect with fans. That was really interesting. Yeah. My second company was even more interesting because I really wanted to tackle this whole thing of this digital divide. So when we talk about anti-racism and things like that, earlier on, I knew technology could help even the playing field, if that's a good word, right? And so my second book was called Net Zero, and it's because I had all this great technology at USC, but my family in Ohio and other places didn't have that. They had to pay for it. So that was my one initial, think of it, like theme of my life was how do I help with technology, expose people to things, help people, especially Black and Brown, where I was at. Yeah. So that's a little bit about me, but the theme has always been this kind of giving visibility to things and giving people opportunity.
Absolutely. And that makes so much sense that at a certain point in your journey, you rolled right into focus and really demystifying and giving opportunity and connections for Black and Brown and female and veteran founders, right? Of startups, of businesses, entrepreneurs who might not just have the same awareness, you know, of the field of how to make the connections, of how to do all the things that it takes to have your own businesses, to have your own startup. That makes so much sense. Hearing you kind of share the beginning of your journey.
Yeah, it's spelled focus, FOKCUS. That K and C in it is my dad's initials. He was my first mentor, so it's a little nod to him. He passed away about 12 years ago, but he would always want to help and serve, right? And I think that's what focus is. We're just serving people, and we call it kind of Net Zero was kind of like how you bridge a digital divide, right? People with internet. But this is more like how we, this kind of innovation divide we found out in a lot of ways. So we actually feel like everyone has a problem they can solve. And if some of our founders are like a single parent or a veteran or you know, someone who's in the military, they live a different problem set than some of my friends at Google who went to Stanford. They will solve problems that other people will not even see. So those are people we're empowering because we want people to solve these very complex problems in different societies and different communities, right? So that's where my heart's at now with focus.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. So Curling, I'm going to jump right into the first question, and I'm just going to give our listeners a spoiler alert. Curling will go rogue and he will ask me questions back. So I just knew that it was going to happen. So I'm ready for it as much as I can be. But yeah, let's jump right in. So Curling, to you, what does it mean to be an activist in 2021? And do you consider yourself to be one?
You know what? I do always felt like I was an activist, but I didn't use that word. So that's really interesting. So when I hear that word, like, am I or not? I always feel like I was at USC. I was president of this group called 100 Black Men. And we would do all types of things around the USC community. We would bring speakers in, mostly African-American speakers in, just so the USC community can see intellectuals who are African-American, things like that, exposing into things. Or we would actually speak at all the universities around, or the high schools around Los Angeles, from Manual Arts to Crenshaw, just so they can see Black and Brown students who are at USC and just encourage them, right? So I always feel like I was this activist, and even I was pre-law. Carrie, I was supposed to go to NYU law school, and so I love, you know, this kind of civil rights type of mode, but I never thought I was an activist. I always just felt I was serving people. And so in 2021, especially in 2020, when everyone was talking about Black Lives Matter and a lot of things like nature, I did one tweet out, or I actually think it maybe was like LinkedIn, and I had a picture of my dad. And he was talking to the grandkids, talking to my daughter, like his nice little picture there. And I put a little quote in there. I said, I mean, if my dad was here, he would he would focus on serving people. And I just pretty much challenged everyone to just serve the people that really need help. And at that point, it was like Black, Brown, you know, they needed to have that time of people coming to them and serving them, right? At that time, the people that's like, how can you help? Well, I think one way you can help is actually let people know that you're there for them. So when I think of activism, I think I encompass it all, but I never put that label on me. I just actually put on like I was going to be a person of service to the community. And that looks like activism. And it even sounds like activism, even stuff like 100 Black Men in the Library. But I never had that, never put that label on me. I think maybe, Carrie, I never put that label on me because I didn't feel like when Martin Luther King and those groups were doing, they were activists. They were like putting their life on the line. So there's like a high bar when I say that, like those guys, they put their life on the line. I have not put my life on the line. So I never felt like I was at that level. But I do feel like there's some sort of impact that I've done or groups that have been connected with me have done. So hope that makes sense a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been here on the Inclusion First podcast thinking about activism like a spectrum.
So I love that.
MLK, Martin.
I love that.
Welcome back. Everyone is on one end. Right. Like, where do we? We're like, I'm way over. Actually, you impact a lot of people, Curling. So you're probably farther along that line than you would say because you're so humble and you are, you know, servant. That's like, that's the centering force for you.
Yeah.
Like that. How do you serve? How are you a servant leader?
Yeah.
Even. And so how do we start to put and try on these different versions of activism? Because I feel like we all have an opportunity to do so. So thank you for sharing kind of your wrestling with the word.
Yeah, I'm wrestling with the word, yeah. Doing, right? Mm-hmm. You helped me out with that spectrum. That actually really, I received that, Carrie. That was good. That kind of lightened the load a little bit. Okay, that's true. You did something like that. That was good.
Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned 2020 and, you know, we're here towards the end of 2021. Talk to me a little bit about anti-racism, what it means to you and how it is showing up in your current work and in your life as well.
Yeah, no, it's so interesting. I'm on this something new in my life, right? So when you start a company, and we mentored about 4,000 companies, I always tell people just focus on your company, right? Focus on the product and customer and like take care of yourself. Those are the three things. Don't get on boards. Right, that can kind of distract you. But recently, I've been on a few boards. In fact, at the beginning of 2020, I became part of one of my first boards, Startup San Diego. You're part of it too. Workforce Partnership Board, San Diego Workforce Partnership Board, and I'm on this Connect All board, right? And I decided to do that. And maybe I'll take you on a little story, but I had some seminary classes when I was a little kid. And one thing I learned about, like when you go into a new place, say if you go to Africa, right, new place, there's three stages you go in. The first stage I've learned is that you go in this learner stage where you learn about the culture. You learn about how people do things, how they talk, even slang. The second phase you go into is this kind of peer-to-peer stage where you're kind of alongside them. You can maybe help them do farming. You can maybe help them do something that you've seen over this first year of learning, like, oh yeah, I can maybe kind of help that way. And then the last phase that you're in, it takes longer to get there, but it's an important phase for you to know when you're helping a community, is this phase called the storytelling phase, meaning I can leave Africa and go to back to the U.S. and say, hey, this is something that Africa needs. This is something I've observed that we need from them. We can learn a lot from them because the way they actually deal with people and help people who are homeless, like that's something we can use here in the U.S. So you become a storyteller, right? And the stage I am in right now is still learning. So we talk about activism. Like, I feel like I'm still learning, but there's some aspects of what I've done over the last 20, 25 years where I feel like I could possibly, this aspects of my life, I could be a storyteller. So I just became a board member because I feel like, okay, even though I'm still learning in other areas where anti-racism and things that I see that it's very blatant. I can probably help with that board. I can help with that community. So I put you on Startup San Diego board because I feel like, you know what, that community, that where they're helping so many founders, really needs your guidance, Carrie. I said, really needs your help understanding what anti-racism is, really needs your help with your storytelling on how we can move certain things. Sometimes we use the word move the needle. So that's why I feel like I'm at now. Certain areas, still learning. Other areas, since I've been Black all my life, I can maybe help and be a storyteller with people on how my experience is. So I've been telling a lot more about my experience, just so you guys know, at USC, private college, but it's in the hood. And so even though I was an honor student president, different organizations, USC, doing a lot of good things, I got pulled over about 20 times. I was profiled a lot. I had a little 1969 bug, and I know I was going tangents, but this little bug was, I love this little bug, but it was a little wild, right? But I would get pulled over all the time for why are you here? So I said, hey, I just came, I have a 24-hour lab I have to go to get ready for my engineering thesis class, right? So I had to stay up here late, right? So that affected my thought process a lot, going through some of that thing. Also, what affected me a lot, and this is all about this kind of learning, right, to storytelling, was that where I grew up at in Altadena, Pasadena, it was pretty privileged. All my neighbors went to USC, UCLA, right? All my neighbors were in a certain echelon of social status. Only when my dad did some entrepreneurship in Watts, I don't know if you guys know, there was this thing called the Watts riots in LA. It was huge. It impacted that city, still has an impact, I say. But only when my dad started doing mentoring down there and having a business down there, I knew that being Black or brown, there is some disadvantages, right? And even systemic advantage, because I learned about Watts, and I said, wow, they haven't moved too far from the Watts riots. It's still burnt out buildings here, Dad. Like, what is that about, right? That school right there, I have nets on my basketball court. I have things there. I went to school. They didn't have books, Carrie, in Watts. The kids didn't have books when they were reading. So I knew when I was really little that there was something different about being Black and brown. And that affected me a lot because I would go back to Pasadena and it wouldn't be like that, right? I was learning computer science in my honor program at 11. That's how Lil Curling learned how to code at 11, because I had a school with computers and a professor who learned computer science when I was 11, right? Mm-hmm. So many other Lil Curlings, I feel like if they had that program in their school, would be working at IBM and Facebook. So I knew there was differences there. And so that I wanted the viewers to hear that story on why I feel like I can story tell, right? And so why I'm on boards now, like Workforce Partnership, is because we're moving funds to Black youth. We just approved that, right? Like, but it's like, it took a Black Lives Matter. It took something to move people that direction. But now I understand that, you know, there's more need. In fact, you eloquently said this to me and Joanna so much, is that sometimes I'm in the boards and people are really worried about this group, right? Right? Where they said, like, you're helping this group, but you know what? They're still here, right? Black and brown are still here in a lot of areas of education and wealth creation and things of that nature. And that's what Focus is talking about, wealth creation, creating companies, things of that nature, right? We feel like that's a building block on getting people at a certain level if you own your own company. But that's where I'm at. This board part is a different type of aspect because I have to actually, you know, our boards, predominantly I'm only African-American on my boards usually. And what happens is that it's a little bit draining. I'll be honest with everyone. I've had so many people come up to me and ask me, how can I help? So I have a few basic questions I do. On the storytelling one, I think I got this from a pastor, but I've been borrowing it from him. When people ask me, like, you know what, I heard about Black Lives Matter, I heard, like, you know, there's certain things, like, what can I do to help? And it's this acronym I've been using. I hope I get it right. It's called HELP. H is, I think it's actually, H is actually just hearing and listening what's going on. I believe that's how it works. I'll remember how it is. E is like educating yourself, right? So reading books. There's so many great books, you know, James Baldwin. There's so many great things you can read. L is being loving, right? That's a real weird word in business. I use it a lot in my podcast. Like as a CEO, you should like love the people your employees, because as you love and support them, they're going to be supporting people that who are your customers. So, right, you got to model how you want them to model how they help their customers, right? So I use this loving part. And this P is, that's interesting. I'll paraphrase this one, but it's perpetuating. It's continuing to learn and continuing to grow. Because you need to know that, it's kind of like you always want to have this culture of learning in your home. I always tell you have to have a culture of learning at your company, your startup should be a culture of learning. But at your home, if you're really focused on trying to help the community, you should continue to learn why do Black youth maybe need help, right? I work at San Diego Workforce Partnership. I work with this group of opportunity youth. We usually 3 hours, Carrie. We put them in groups of five and we have them start companies in 3 hours. And these kids are amazing, Carrie. I mean, amazing. We usually give a theme. Usually a theme I give them, Carrie, is like, I say, okay, I want you to start a company, but I want the company to help your community. Okay? So I gave them a little framework. The reason why I give them a framework is I want them to think beyond them, not just about them. And I get one of the interesting companies that came out of it was that they created a study group where all Black and Browns can come to learn how to learn algebra, right? Yeah, like this is how they're doing.
Learn how to learn. Yeah. So I love that. Yeah. It's not learning, I'm just learning how to learn.
Learn how to learn, right? there was another one that was trying to help with affordable housing. One of the kids were having a hard time because they were immigrants. Like affordable housing is a big thing, Curling. I want to figure this out. Can we have it where people just, we have like a fund that buys housing that it will become affordable. Yeah, of course. Yes. Let's think about what that is. That's a CDFI. So the way I think about it is if I became more of a storyteller and actually create more little curlings earlier on, I think that's way more important. So I'm more now, yes, I'll be part of board and help with funding, but how can I help these 16 to 24 groups start understanding they can solve their own problems, right? Because like I said earlier, only they can solve it, right? Now we can help them get funding and stuff, but only they can see those and be compassionate enough to solve that problem.
Right.
If I can go a little bit further to that, is that when I look at founders, there's three things I look for founders. The three things I look for founders is one, if they're committed, right? You can learn a lot how people are committed. We had a founder who's so worried that his five-year-old daughter was going to elementary school because they just had active shooters. He worked on a project for years to see if he can make his elementary school for his daughter safer, even though it made it safe for everybody. He was committed to that because he was worried about his daughter. The second thing I look for is if they're competent. Can I put them in one room? Right, I definitely could put MLK and Malcolm X. I could put them in one room and they could figure something out on how to help people out. But I do look for commitment. But this competent part is really important too. Meaning having a team. Carrie, you already told me like you had this really great podcasting, executive producer. You need to have a team, right, to help you and guide you. So that's the second part I look for. The last one is really interesting. It's called coachability, Carrie. When you have someone who's coachable, if you have like did you have Don Norman on?
Yeah,
you had him on. Really great. He's one of those people that is a great coach, but he showed in your podcast how coachable he is, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So think about those three traits. I think all those three traits are needed for someone to be an activist. Actually, someone who's committed, right? one who could actually say, like, you know what, this is a huge problem, systematic. I don't know how we're going to solve this. Maybe we can do something, but we'll figure it out. I'm going to be committed to it, however long it's going to take. Two, be competent. Can we figure out how we can modify critical race theory to make it a little bit more palatable for Iowa? Can we figure that out? Can they ban it? Right. So that's the good. And the last thing is they're coachable, meaning that they might have all the answers. They might have went through this whole process. But if some little kid talked to them and said, you know what, I just need a chance. And just me a little teary, but I think the one thing is actually when you're coachable, you're open to hearing something from a kid. And that's key, right? It's really good to be able to, I think the Bible says that, to be like a kid, right? Sometimes we're on boards, we're on CEOs and things of that nature, and like we have all the answers. We went to Harvard Business School and things of that nature. I have friends who went to Harvard Business School, nothing wrong with that. But the key thing, if you are acting like a kid, you're going to be more receptive to being coached. You're going to be more susceptible to be curious. And as you know, in this state and where we're at, people are being canceled all the time. What you need to understand is that you need to be able to have this kind of humility to help people. And I think that goes back to that one servant. To be a servant, like, it's just difficult. And I think to be an activist, you are a servant. And you're going to wash people's feet. You're going to make sure that they are clothed. You're making sure you're doing these things. And in the long run, maybe you can affect someone, right? Mm-hmm. After you wash someone's feet enough times, or they might open their heart up to saying, you know what, you might be right on this part, right? You know what? These schools in this area are not the same as, I'll give you that, right? Like, so you have to have this humility. There was this great story, Carrie, you know, I'm going on tangents, but there was this great story I heard on anti-racism where this one African-American guy kept befriending people who were part of the KKK. And it started really very friendly on that part, but it went to the part where when you interview the person from the KKK and saying, like, so why did you leave the KKK? Why? You said, you know what? Well, first of all, he always just respected my values and I respected his. He was very open to hearing what I was saying. And I start becoming more open to him. That's activism to me. Not pushing your national agenda necessarily, but listening to where that person is at and having a real relationship with that person. And then a lot of walls break down after that. But he wound up, I think, talking about 16, befriending about 16 KKK, and all of them left the KKK, right? It was so interesting. But he just seems like a really humble guy. He said, no, I just thought I could, you know, just, I just wanted to know where they were coming from. That's all, you know, and I wanted to know where I was coming from. But it was really low key. But he was committed. He just deal with one. Yeah. He was confident. He actually figured out just having a relationship with someone was good. And he was coachable because he said, I learned a lot from what they were saying. And I said, okay, that makes sense. Let's see, let's unpack that, right? So he had those three qualities, and I felt like that's a true activist right there. Seeing that, now that was a dramatic thing. That's KKK. You don't always hang out with people in KKK in California, but that was something that really affected me on what activism could look like, right? That was like a real example, Carrie. Hope I gave some things. You know, I'm going to bob and leave and, you know, ebb and flow. But that was some things I've been thinking about. But all that to go to say is that there should be ways we can measure activism as this kind of spectrum. But I think the true part of it is that there's this humanity piece that I've been seeing more and more is what's helpful, right? That if I can see that you are a person, I'm a person, not you're an immigrant and I'm a citizen, or like that, like when you start talking like that, that you can lose a little bit of this humanity that we all have.
Those stories were all fantastic.
Okay.
Now you all know why I wanted to have Corinne. I'm like, I'm taking copious notes. writing down all the acronyms and just the wisdom that's being shared here today is amazing. And I love the help metaphor that you talked about, and then these three components of what makes a good founder, but now also a good activist.
Like,
that's innovation right there. Like, you know, taking something from a different sector or field and applying it in a new way. And so this idea of committed, competent, and coachable. And that openness that is required, the willingness to learn, the willingness to be wrong, the willingness to make mistakes and to learn from that, and the willingness to, I was going to say put aside our differences. That's not always easy, but it's kind of like the after effect of this proximity, right? Of connecting through humanity. You start to like see your differences less as these dividers and just as things that can like coexist, right? Like your belief isn't in competition with my belief. They're just both beliefs and they can both live side by side, even if they're very different, because in that we're able to find other ways where we actually do connect. And also differences can make things just so much better. And even the idea that that you were sharing earlier about, you know, different students and different founders coming from these different backgrounds, seeing problems that other people wouldn't see. But these problems are necessary and important because other people like them and even not like them are having these problems too. And so we just get more opportunity to help, more opportunity to create things that solve these complex problems by looking at it from all these different angles through these different people with these different experiences and backgrounds.
That's what makes your show so good, because you actually bring people from different backgrounds to talk about it. Mr. Norman's talk was really great. I got to see part of that. But the one great thing, Carrie, what you're doing, to be honest, is that you're bringing words. I think you always have, with that learning phase I took, you had to go learning, right? And peer-to-peer. Mm-hmm. That learning phase, you're getting language. You're getting this commonality language that everyone can use. And you can build off that. So I always love that. I think you I always have these Carrieisms about that. You said inclusion curling is an active process. I said, oh my goodness, that's really solid. So I use that a lot, that word active, a lot more, because am I active? Am I in some ways, I don't have to be perfect, but can I progress and be a little bit more active today than I was yesterday? Okay. So I really love how you have these certain words, and you know, you shepherd our entrepreneur in residence program at Startup San Diego, and everyone I talked to was like, oh my, you know what, curling, I mean, they were just being really honest with me, like Carrie kind of like changed my life. like people were using words like that. Oh, that's great. And you always want people to come in your program to be better, right? And you really helped our entrepreneurs in residence because you changed your life. You had them think differently, right? They went through those stages really fast, learning peer-to-peer. And now they actually feel like, you know, I could probably talk to my wife a little bit more about this now and stuff like that, because Carrie gave me some of the language. They use that word, some of the language and things to use. So let me commend you on that.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you so much. And it reminds me of a sports metaphor, like better the ball. Every time you touch the ball, do something better with it for the next person who's going to get it. And I think that's something that your work embodies for sure. And, you know, that's something that a lot of us who are in this space are trying to do, right? How do we better the ball? And I think one of the most important things for me is just like, how do you meet people where they are? And that came through in several of your stories, meeting people where they are, because no one wants to be judged or shamed or blamed. Even when like the human part of us like, well, they deserve that, but no, that's like a different, your outcome is different. Your end game is different. Our end game is to start to mitigate and destroy and transform racism. We can't come from that energy of shame and blame, because that makes us right and it makes them wrong. And no one wants to be wrong.
No one wants to be wrong, Gary.
And it doesn't matter what you say. Some people will just twist themselves to not be wrong. And they're going to stay in whatever energy they're going to stay in that spot. Right. But what we're trying to create is an opportunity to connect, connect across our differences, to connect across our similarities, to start to break down those walls and to help people to think in different ways so that they can activate. You said, you know, active.
Yes.
It's an active state. How do we activate people towards thinking about anti-racism, towards thinking about inclusion, towards thinking about equity and what they can actually do? And they don't need to be the MLK or the Malcolm X. They need to be who they are in their circle and figure out how they can make those small changes. You know, we're not asking anyone to quantum leap. We're just asking you to think a little bit differently, and then just see kind of where that goes, right?
I love how you explain that. And it does feel like a quantum leap, though.
Well, we need a quantum leap, but we don't get there quite so violently, if you will.
Carrie, you know, I was going to ask you a question. You know, I was always talking to the cohort about things. You know what? Is there things that you've seen? So in when you're founding a company, you're looking at trends a lot. Mm-hmm. You're saying, you know what, Uber did this whole gig economy. That's a trend. Can I apply that to senior care, right? Can we have other people help? Like, we always are looking at trends and looking at things. What are some of the trends you see with businesses that maybe could be applied to a startup? Meaning, one thought process I had is that we have this thing, Carrie. It's called the business model canvas. Have you seen? That's one side that talks about revenue and business, but it's like Legos. You can kind of figure out maybe where your company needs help in. Is that like a business model canvas? Is there some sort of structure that I could give business that looks like that can help them? Because we talk about spectrums, right? Startups are always at this like base spectrum is the base, but you said you can always start at just one or two people to make your culture very inclusive, right? So it's more business type of thing, but it's been coming up just because people are just thinking about it, and I like, let me ask Carrie on that. So it's this business model, and you can create it if it's not around, this business model canvas, right? But it's got this inclusion canvas that startups can look at, like, oh, you know, like, we need to have that's these key great stakeholders. Yeah. So that was one of the questions, or one of the things that's come more like a challenge for you, like making something of that nature, because we have so many founders that if they had something like that, especially something that's trending, like that's trending, right? Business model canvas, pretty much trending. If you're a startup, you kind of know that. If you give a startup something, inclusion canvas, they'll be like, oh, I got it. Okay, I know that trend. I can work with it. So that was just one thought process I was just thinking about, and like the groups kind of needed. They wanna be, companies wanna do the right thing, right? But sometimes economic things that pushes them the wrong way, and so sometimes what we're doing, and you're like a great mentor on that, is like saying, you know what, you can't have one without the other. In fact, if you have diversity, you have inclusion, your company's better, right? There's a diversity of thought. It's you're gonna have more. Vision said that you have more income, right? I have this book right here called Founder's Dilemma. He's one of our mentors, and he actually even says that if you have a more diverse team, it works better economically. Right. It's better. So people know that, but we're not really always. That's not really reinforced, Carrie. And so that's why I was talking about this kind of inclusion canvas. Like if we can reinforce some of that, it might be interesting. But that was one of my thoughts, because and that's probably like 40 questions I put into one. I know we only had a little time, but it got boiled down to like they needed like a little framework they can have if it was like a little, you know, founding team. What would be a framework that could help them, guide them in that part? But Carrie, you're doing great, and I feel like you're the MVP of that is everything you're doing on the podcast, everything like that. Like, you know, you're providing that framework.
I love the idea of an inclusion canvas. That makes me want to like put all my other to-dos aside.
Sorry about that. I'm all distracted.
Like, what would that be? One of the things that I talk to companies and organizations about kind of first is like, what is your why? Like, why does this matter to you? And how does that align with your business goals and your values as a company and organization as well? And, you know, we've talked about this, but like the internal and the external, like internally, what is your why? Why does this matter to the people who work at your company? and the partners that you work with internally, but then also what is your why on the outside, and whatever you're creating, that product needs to also be inclusive. And so you run your business inclusively and you create something that is inclusive.
I love that.
On the outside, but why does that matter to you?
I love that. I like how you gave me your hand gestures always help me out too.
Sorry, y'all can't see that.
Can't see that.
This time. And then even like defining like what, like, okay, so we know what our why is. This is why it's core to our business and who we are as an organization.
Sure.
Okay, so what does it actually look like out in the world or out in our company? What are the things that we're actually doing? What are the tactics that we're taking to show that this matters? Because I can say inclusion matters to me. I can say equity matters. But then when you look at my staff and we're 400 people and we're 99% right, okay, well, diversity doesn't matter that much, because even if you say it, like, it, the outcome is disparate than that, right? And we said we're going to...
That was our theme, was outcome.
outcomes. And so how do you even measure, like, okay, so what are the outcomes? And how do you use that as your, like, kind of accountability in your scorecard? I also love what you said earlier about, like, being a servant leader. Like, if inclusion, if equity are in your company values, how does that show up for you, like, as a leader? How do you serve your community, whatever those people look like? And who isn't at the table? Constantly asking those questions, like, who's not here, who's not represented, that should be, and actually create those support structures. And one thing I think people don't do often enough is, all right, so every organization, every human has the opportunity to model something, right?
I love that.
You never know who's watching you. Mm. People are always watching you, no matter, even if you feel like no one is, people are, there's someone who's watching
you. That's interesting.
Whether it's a child, an animal, your neighbor.
That's a good one.
And so what you're doing and embodying matters. So how do you actually take that and use it intentionally to, like, show, hey, here's our why, here's our what, here's how we show up. We're actually sharing this with people freely so that they can see us modeling, because it's one of those things like, oh, we don't talk about it. No one wants to show their diversity numbers because everyone has problems.
Exactly.
What if you showed them and you said, hey, you know what? These aren't good.
Mm.
And this is what we're doing about it. These aren't good. And we're going to be accountable versus hiding it, right? So how do you actually use yourself as a model and be someone or an organization that creates these ripples of inclusion? And you never know where they're going to go. We can't see where the ripples of the impact of our lives and our work go most of the time.
Yeah.
But if you're creating intentionally these ripples of inclusion, imagine if everyone did that. Like, these ripples are going to touch. And we've talked about this
before. I love it.
Get to those concentric circles.
Yeah, I love it.
And now we've got this field of inclusion that we're all playing within.
It's a great image.
I accept your challenge to create an inclusion campus.
You heard it here.
Okay, Curling. So this has been fantastic. I have like 17 more questions for you, but I will, I will just give you.
We can do part two. We can do part two later.
Oh yes! Yay! Okay, good. You heard that, people. We're going to do part two with Curling.
Excellent. We're on record.
And Johanna too. Now we're going to drag you both back to the show. So, Curling, for people who are thinking about how they can be activists, how they can be anti-racist, how they can pull inclusion and equity into their business or even into their lives, but they're just not sure how, like, what's the one piece of advice that you would give someone who is kind of like on this fence of like, okay, I've heard these things and I want to do it, but I'm not sure, like, how do you activate them? What's one piece of advice you would give to activate them into joining the fray, into figuring out how they can have an impact and, you know, embody their own form of activism, however large or small that might be?
Oh, I love that. My dad always said, give people one or two tips. So you're on it. we live near a golf course, and you only give people one or two tips when they're about to hit, so they don't have too much in their head. I think the one tip, I might have two, but the one tip starts from Mother Teresa. She said, help who's in front of you. She always said that, right? It was across the world or like there's this person in front of you that you might offhand in the back of your head, like, you know what? I can serve that person, right? I can serve that person.
That's how
I would start, right? And that you might know who that person is, right? And a person of color, but see if you can serve that person anyway. Just ask them. That's how I would start, right? Because you never know what that relationship's gonna gain what you're going to learn from that person. You'll probably learn more from that person than he learned from you or she, vice versa. So that's the one tip I have.
I love that. And that goes right back to the ripple, right? Yeah. Like wherever we are, we can make that ripple. Exactly. And you don't have to go and learn something new. You don't have to cross the world. Like there's an opportunity right in your sphere of influence. And so how do you find that and start? I start right there. That's so powerful. And a message that we love hearing echoed for sure.
That's it. Carrie, thank you so much for what you're doing.
Thank you, Curling. So if anyone wants to find out more about Focus, about you, follow your work, where can they find you? Where's the best place for them to find you?
Good point. Just go to www.fokcus.com and there's information there. Carrie's like on the front page, I think, because we have like the this YouTube channel thing in the middle and it's Carrie's space like that. So just click on there. You can, there's about 100 videos on how to start your business and stuff like that.
Love it. Curling, you're amazing. Thank you so much for dropping so much knowledge on me and all of us today. I'm seriously just going to like render this thing and go back and take notes because it was, there's so much good stuff that you shared with us. So you are a joy and a pleasure and I can't wait for part two.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.